Welcome to the podcast To Be Named Later, where we explore the world a conversation at a time. Sit back and enjoy. Here are your hosts, Chris and Kelly.
Hello, everyone. Thanks again for listening to the podcast To Be Named Later. Chris, my co-host, is back from dinners and work conferences and partying all night to spend a little time with me. Welcome back, Chris. Hope the conference was good for work.
Yeah, thanks, Kelly. Appreciate it, man. We weren't able to hook up, but like you said, I was throat deep in Jack Daniels and steaks and having a good time representing the company.
Yeah, so let's jump right into it, Chris. While you were gone, what's been happening, speaking of steaks, with our football picks, and where are we over the last 2 weeks? I kind of let you keep that data, so I didn't have it last week. Where are we?
Yeah, I thought you might bring that up, so I can feel the smile on your face coming through the headphones there. You've made some moves. We weren't able to catch up last week, so over the last 2 weeks, you've one-upped me 2 weeks in a row now. So all that celebrating I was doing after I took the lead, you squashed that pretty quick, bud. So you beat me by a game in week three. You beat me by a game in week four. And through all those efforts, you've now taken the lead 33-32 through 4 weeks. So I don't want everyone at home to do the math, but just so we're clear, that is not impressive. You and I got some work to do collectively, but I think we're not the only ones across the country that are struggling to pick winners in these games so far this year.
In full transparency, while I'm ahead, I know. So Chris and I also take part in kind of a family and friends overall football pool, and trust me, every time I make my picks, it tells me where I am, and I know in that one, last 2 weeks in a row, it's told me I am 21st. So
yeah,
like I said,
do, bud.
I know I got a day job, and it's not sports prognostication. So a few different interesting games over the last few weeks, Chris, that we didn't catch up on. I'd like to go just talk about a couple of them and get back, if you could, one of those things that, bizarre plays. Can you give us a rundown of, I guess, what they're calling the butt punt?
You remember that? Yeah, that was a couple of weeks ago, the Dolphins. not how they drew it up, I'm sure. You get pinched when you're – so I think 14 to 15 yards, depending on the punter and the setup, is about what you want. That's what they practice at. For punt situations, that establishes your protection. That should give the punter enough time to step into a punt comfortably. And anytime you're backed up on your own goal line, you shorten that distance. Could potentially make a multitude of problems. Number one, the rushers are not as far away anymore, so they don't have to run 15 yards to get to where the punter's standing. They maybe only have to run 12, and everything becomes condensed. Not to mention the long snapper, this is out of his rhythm. Those guys are professionals. They generally do a pretty good job of snapping the ball, but, it changes what he's used to some degree. And on that particular play, the Dolphins were backed up. And so who he hit was his basically like personal protector. So there's generally on most punt coverages two guys who are straddling the center. Okay, so there's a line. You got eight guys lined up on the line. And generally they're basically lined up on the line all toe-to-toe, right, or foot-to-foot. With not much spacing at all, different than you would like a normal scrimmage play. And then behind the center, on either side of basically his rear end, about 4 or 5 yards behind the line, are generally two guys, and they're to protect any rush coming up the middle. So like most things in sports, you want to protect up the middle first. That's the shortest distance between two points, right? So if the guys coming off the edges want to get there, they have to run farther. Takes them an extra step or two. And so what happened on this play is they were backed up. They didn't have their full 15 yards. They had more like 11 to work with. And Yeah, punter took a step. He took the ball. Everything worked out that great there. He took a step, went to punt it, and his personal protector had backed up a step. And he just punted it right into his butt, man, and launched it out of the back of the end zone for a safety. A play you don't see too often, Kelly.
Yeah, it's, I think the first time in my many years of football watching that. Speaking of other stuff you kind of haven't seen too often, don't know where this keeps coming from, but, you know, I like the radio announcer, Kevin Harlan. He seems to have a lot of these again. So we had another fan on the field incident on Monday here again in the 49ers game, running on the field, pink smoke bomb. I mentioned that just because Kevin Harlan, the radio announcer, always, you know, he did one where a cat was on the field one time. You can find that highlight. And yeah, just kind of nuts.
He's at the 15.
Yeah. But what's up with all these people running on the field, man? I mean, I don't get it.
Yeah, I mean, it's an opportunity. You know, you got to know your place, man. This isn't your venue, you know. And, you know, you can use this, I think, a little more in our everyday lives, man. Know the position. Know where you're at. You know, if you're at someone's birthday party, don't make it about you. You know, let's focus on the person whose party it is, right? And you know, this is an NFL game. It's a sports contest. Now, NFL's, you know, are probably entertainment first and sports second, I think, in a lot of ways nowadays. Wasn't always that way, but I think that's the case, right? And you know, there's actually two fans. One got handled right away. And the second one made it all the way onto the field. Yeah, had a flare with pink smoke blowing out of it. And I'll tell you this, man. I've watched that video probably, you know, 10, 12 times now. And my favorite one is, you know, Eli and Peyton do their thing on Monday nights. And I just think they do an amazing job, man. If you get a chance to listen to those guys, they're just funny. They see the game from a different light than maybe a lot of other color analysts do. And they present it in a different way. You know, their take on it was pretty good. But bottom line is the fan was given the security, given them the business. Man, excuse me, they just couldn't catch him. And that fan, you know, in the process of weaving around the field, made his way over towards the Rams sideline at one point and got a little too close for comfort from Bobby Wagner's perspective. And I think the way Bobby I read his comments after the game, too. And, you know, I just said, hey, man, it looks like the security was struggling. They couldn't catch the guy. I thought I'd lend him a hand so we can get back to the game. And I don't know what it would be like to get hit by Bobby Wagner just on the street. But I bet it would hurt significantly. And this fan is in shorts and a T-shirt. Bobby Wagner is in full uniform, helmet included. And, you know, those guys wear Douglas pads. They have the finest headwear available. And he stepped off the sideline. And I'll tell you, man, like I said, I've watched that video a few times. He pulled back. Bobby Wagner did the minimum. He just laid this dude out, man. You know, crown of the helmet would have been flagged if it was on the field, man. He lowered his head and put the crown of his helmet into the chin of this 180-pound fan that was running around. And I'll tell you what, whatever fun that guy was having just before that hit, it all stopped abruptly. Read this morning that there's a lawsuit against the Los Angeles Rams for assault. It's just a joke, man.
I have a real problem with that, to be honest. I mean, look... And I'm certainly not one condoning violence against people or anything like that. But let's be clear. You've shown yourself to be unstable by running onto a football field with, close to more than 100 people that any one of which could do serious damage to you. You're running around with a hot fire and... Yes, I'm sure there's a little bit of I'm just going to take this guy out mentality, but you don't belong there. And at some level, players are going to react. And I don't have. I think it's ridiculous of a lawsuit myself.
Yeah, and what's infuriating is the taxpayers are footing that bill for this, you know, and this boy, I could, don't get me started on this stuff. So, you know, we try to stick this stick to stuff that's light, and we focus on the sports, but the reality is, you know, paperwork had to be filed. People have to take their time away from other things that they were working on in order to process this, you know, you know, that's a problem. Yeah, you showed up somewhere you didn't belong. You knew full well you didn't belong before you jumped over that wall and went running around in the field. You knew it wasn't going to end well for you. Now, what the pitcher was exactly going to look like, you might not have known. I don't think he anticipated getting hit by a player. I figured he thought he'd probably get tackled by security and you know, he'd be in trouble for it. But, yeah, I have no problem with what Bobby Wagner did at all. And to be honest, man, I mean, that guy probably deserved more. So, like I said, you watch the hit, and Wagner, you know, he could have given him some more if he wanted to, man. I mean, you know, he took two steps and tackled the guy, you know, a little forearm shiver, you know, to finish it, make sure he was down. But, you know, Bobby Wagner could have done a lot more damage than he did. He did the minimum just to get, let's go. We're here to play a football game, sir. You know, this isn't your spot, you know.
You know, and apparently, whatever he had, a flare or whatever, one of the things they mentioned on the radio was even – so I remember Kevin Harlan saying that wherever they do the game from at that stadium, they're like 8 stories above the field. And he said even from 8 stories high, he could see like 2 burn spots on the field from this flare. So
– well, and, you know, I don't know that you just assume the worst right from go. But man, I have no idea what that smoke is. Well, you know, I don't know what's in there. And you know, before he went out on the field, you know, I mean, I'm sure he envisioned something different. But might even been on a dare for all I know. But the I know he was an activist, and that's great that you have a message. I don't have a problem with that. But know your place and know where that message gets to be given. And on Monday Night Football, in someone else's house, that's not it. This isn't your place to talk. So. Yeah.
Hopefully, you know, I mean, I know that, hey, I know there's been throughout the years of sports, people have done different things, and, you know, going way back, there was like Morgana, the kissing bandit. You know, yeah. And maybe that, you know, just there's, to me, there's a difference in, like, then too, I'll tell you that running onto a football field is probably a lot worse idea. Not saying either one's right than a baseball field, just because of the environment and the, you know. And anyway, the most ironic thing is that every game I've been to, I mean, they clearly tell you don't go in the field to play. If you do, it's a crime and you're likely going to, but, you know. So, a lot of weirdness at times. As far as the games go, I want to talk about a couple of the games over the last 2 weeks in addition. And actually, that game right there, the Rams and the 49ers, is an interesting one in part because of what it did to the division. We'll see how it ends up, but that whole NFC West, it's the only division right now, everybody's 2-2. You know, it's interesting. Not saying I would have thought that. Again, it's early, but kind of an interest. We decided in one of our preseason episodes that we thought that was going to be a tough division. It's really interesting to see how it's shaking out.
Well, and there's still time to go, right? So I think the Seahawks, we're 4 games in, and you and I keep saying this, it's still early, and it is. And the Seahawks, I think, have outperformed what we thought they'd be. I think if you took the name off of Geno Smith's jersey and wrote Burrow on it, or hell, I mean, to this point, you could write Brady on it, and you'd be like, yeah, he looks pretty good. I think there's some preconceived notions about Geno Smith that, you know, he's just been around for a little bit, man. You think you kind of know who the guy is. The reality is, man, I mean, if you watch the play, he's playing very well, and the Seahawks are playing well. I think they're outperforming what we anticipated from them. But, again, it's early, man, and you know, I think the Rams are still dealing with a little bit of a hangover. They're, you know, starting to come together, But, yeah, I'm not surprised that that division is tight. I think all those teams, any one of those teams, I still don't believe Seahawks have the firepower, I think, to win the division in the end. You know, they're going to play a lot of games, and I think as the cream starts to rise, I don't think the Seahawks will be there. But I'm not surprised at that division being close. I'm a little surprised. You know, I thought the AFC West was the clear leader by a long shot. The Raiders are stumbling. They got a win finally, but the Broncos don't look as good as I thought they would. Chargers have had some injuries. They too, though, don't look as dominant as I thought they'd be. And then right back to full circle to the Chiefs, who have been the chief in that division for last few years, basically since Mahomes got there, really even dating back to Alex Smith to some degree. You know, they're better than I thought they would be this year right from go. So,
yeah, I'll say it, man. I right now, anyway, Smith, Geno Smith up in Seattle, outperforming what I thought, you know. But, hey, man, maybe he just never got the right opportunity. I hope he keeps it up for the year. Why not? I love those kind of stories of guy finally gets a shot and makes something happen out of it.
I agree with you wholeheartedly, man. I got nothing by all accounts. I mean, I don't know the guy personally, but it seems like Geno Smith has always carried himself professionally. He seems like a genuine good dude. And, yeah, he's getting another opportunity, and he's making the most of it, man. I'm all about that, dude. You get a chance in life, you know, just it's all you can ask for, man, and then it's up to you to do something with it. And, you know, who knows how long it'll last and you know, what it'll turn into for him personally. But it's great to see, man. I love it, you know. You know, he's been here for a little bit in this league and you know, never
really. He's like 8 years in, dude.
Yeah, so, you know, I love it, man. I just think it's great.
We'll see how the Denver. I mean, again, it's 4 weeks in. Can't overreact, and that was a long-term investment. But I got to say, the new owners of the Broncos, at least on the initial returns, you know, probably not what they thought they'd be seeing 4 weeks in with Russell Wilson.
No, he's struggling. So, you know, hold judgment. You know, let's see. You know, that division's pretty open. The AFC is more open than I thought. You know, so there's time. And they're sitting at 2-2. You know, they have a game tonight against another team that's really, you know, losing Javonte Williams is pretty devastating. I think, you know, most of us would consider Javonte probably the most talented offensive weapon on that team. He's kind of a freak runner, to be honest with you, Kelly. I mean, he's really special running back. And, you know, they lost him for the season. It's too bad. They have a very capable guy. I wouldn't even necessarily call him a straight backup. I mean, he came into the game second. But Melvin Gordon's been around and has proven himself to be a capable running back in the league. You know, my fear with him is, you know, he had a lot of miles, man. You know, if you were a tailback at Alabama, you know, Najee Harris, Mark Ingram, Derrick Henry, you know, these guys don't necessarily Damien, why can't I think of his name, from the Patriots, Damien Harris. You know, there's three good guys there. When Melvin Gordon was playing at Wisconsin, you know, dude, that dude was carrying the ball 30 times a game, every year.
Oh, yeah. And no, I mean, Wisconsin, you know, I mean, in some ways it can be called running back university. They put a lot of good backs in the league. You know, one that we talked about not too long ago, James White, that retired. Gordon, I can go back, many others, Ron Dane, back in the 90s. Brent Moss, Terrell Fletcher, several others. But typically the way that works at Wisconsin is, hey, man, oh, yeah, and obviously Jonathan Taylor, the most recent. But, I mean, it's pretty clear how it works at Wisconsin. Hey, here you go. We're going to get you the big, as Keith Jackson would call them, the big uglies up front. And we're going to give you the rock 30, 40 times a game. And that's going to be one part of our a big part of our game plan. So you come out of there, even if it's 3 years, with a lot of mileage on the tires already.
Yeah, and historically they start those guys pretty young. You know, if you're the best guy they got as a freshman, you're playing. And so be it. And there's, you know, 4 years of you carrying the rock, you know, 32 carries a game. Anyway, we'll see what happens with the Broncos. I think Melvin Gordon's perfectly capable. NFL's a next man up league, and we see all kinds of opportunities come from you know, other guys getting hurt, and a guy we didn't know of, we hadn't heard of, didn't even know existed, gets an opportunity to shine. Now, we know very well who Melvin Gordon is. I'm trying to think of his name. But, you know, it could be somebody else on the Broncos.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, it's always that. Let's bounce around a little bit, though, Chris, since we brought up Wisconsin back here in the Badger State. First time in 33 years, team did something that's really not common here, and fired their coach.
Yeah,
five games into the season.
Yeah, that's not the standard operating procedure for the Wisconsin Badgers at all. So they usually ride them to death there. I don't know. What's your take on it, man? You're an alum. What are your feelings, Kelly?
You know, and it's really interesting. So I read a really good reporter article today, and he made a lot of good points. A guy named Jesse Temple, who covers the Badgers for The Athletic. And he, because it wasn't a hit job. Look, I think what he said is, in some ways, Paul Chris was too nice of a guy. You know, had a lot of loyalty to people around him, and I think those are all admirable traits. One of the challenges is that right now college football is a fast-moving river, and by that I mean, like, what Wisconsin used to do doesn't necessarily work. One of the big things that this guy talked about in this article was how the recruiting game has changed dramatically, and maybe somebody like Paul Chris wasn't keeping up with it. And it's not just him, but they went out with it. They went without a recruiting coordinator for like 8 months. As a person, I feel bad for Paul Chris. Yes, he's getting a nice big paycheck and a buyout, but it's clear, I mean, he grew up in Wisconsin, played for the Badgers, delivered an article today, talked about how he delivered newspapers as a kid to the athletic staff. His family helped clean up the stadium after games. I mean, this was like his dream job. And but I do think he lost the team. I mean, if I watch pretty much all their games, and wow, first of all, to lose to your coach that left you, and not just lose, but play with a lack of spirit. I don't think he was fired for the game against Illinois. I think that was just the last straw of things that had been thought about. And it's really interesting, right? New AD in the job about 15 months, Chris McIntosh, former player who'd kind of been groomed for the job a little bit. I'm sure it was hard for him, too. I mean, I listened to his press conference, and you could just hear the emotion in his voice. You know, but he's in the big boy chair. Responsible for the whole athletic department, and I think it just shows where college football is, and it's right with the money that's coming around now, the nil for athletes. I got no problem with that. We'll see what we'll see.
Yeah, and Wisconsin historically anyway has always been, I mean, maybe the single best, definitely one of the best development colleges, right? So I can't think off the top of my head of too many other colleges who have built their program the way Wisconsin does. You know, they take local guys and some people from out of state. Obviously, they recruit, and Wisconsin's a known program, and they get some 4- and 5-star athletes to go there, and they have scholarships and everything. But Wisconsin, more than most, they take walk-ons. They take guys who maybe didn't have great offers from other places. They come to Wisconsin, and then they develop. and they teach them how to play football while they're there at the school. And you know, I respect them for that, man. I respect the way they play football. They have a good program, but yeah, it's a big business, and you know, you got to be able to compete talent wise with the other big boys, man. And there's some just monster behemoths out there, you know, basically three quarters of the SEC, and then you know, you got other powerhouse schools, even in your own. League, you have your own conference. You have some guys who are just bigger than you are, man. They just recruit better.
Yeah, I mean, all right. I mean, you got Ohio State's and stuff like that. I think that it's funny when you talk about Wisconsin.
Well, Michigan's
like,
back too. You know, yeah, what I mean, yeah. A lot of people want to go to Michigan and play now.
And those are I mean, those. I think Wisconsin. It's funny that you talk about how they develop people. As I think about it, sometimes I think about, you know, you really can go get a degree in football almost there. And by that, I mean just what you said. I can think of, look, I mean, they've got a long tradition in history of finding, look at two of the players that came through there that were walk-ons to the program. The guy that's now the head coach, Jimmy Leonard, and Mr. All-World Defense and a heck of a guy, J.J. Watt was a walk-on.
Yeah.
So, and those aren't the only two. And
no,
I think
they have a lot,
you know. But so what they do is they find guys. They're not, you know, they're not the 5-star talent, but they coach them up and they find guys that are going to be there for 3-4, most cases 4 years. Sometimes if it's a running back, 3, and they get the most out of them. And I think that's where they've been struggling this year. So we'll see. Let's bounce back. I want to go back to Kansas City for a minute. Because they're still firing on all cylinders, it seems. And
yeah, I'll tell you this, Kelly. That game, I wouldn't say it shocked me, but at a minimum, I was surprised. So I thought the Bucs defense was, I mean, I don't want to say impenetrable, but and I know the Chiefs have a high powered offense with a brilliant. Offensive mind at the helm, and so you figure the Chiefs are gonna score some points, right? They kind of always do. Andy Reid offenses generally do, and then when you look at the talent they have, like, you figure they're gonna be able to move the ball and do some things, right? But I thought the Bucs were an all world defense, and the Chiefs just absolutely tore them up. Now the Bucs made a run at it late, and you know, maybe the Chiefs took their foot off the gas a little bit. I mean, I watched that game. And it didn't like appear like it to me, but you know, give the Bucs credit, man. They got championship pedigree, and you know, they fought back. But in reality, the Chiefs did whatever they wanted to that Bucs defense. Now they got gifted the first one. You know, there's a fumble right from go, and they take over, I think, at the 21 or 22 yard line, and kind of, you know, they made good on it. And second play from scrimmage, get a touchdown to Kelce, and okay, you know. Are bad. I really thought the Bucs defense would settle in, and then every time the Chiefs had the ball, it was just whatever they wanted to do, man. They could run it, they could throw it inside, outside, and I don't know what that says exactly. You know, there's always two sides to every story when there's two teams competing. You know, were the Bucs terrible or were the Chiefs great? And you know, I'm not sure, but all I know is they carved them up, so maybe it's kind of a split of the two or something. But I was shocked. I was surprised by that the Chiefs were able to go in there and do whatever they wanted to the Bucs, and there was nothing the Bucs could do to stop it.
Yeah, I was a little too. So speaking of surprises, I just want to get your take on one other game from the last couple weeks, just because I don't know if it was poor play or great coaching, a combination or what. The Packers and the Patriots. What happened there? I mean, that was like, did Bill Belichick figure it out and coach his defense up?
How do you mean, as far as the Patriots even being able to hang in with the Packers?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, do you remember the first Super Bowl they won? You know, they were supposed to get slaughtered. I want to say they were 14-point underdogs. And then ever since, Bill Belichick has made a career out of getting every ounce out of his team that he can on a week-by-week basis. Now, sometimes he's had really talented teams, you know, and you know, they won 17 straight division titles or something like that. So, obviously he had talented teams mixed in there, but if anybody in the history of football could get the most out of the least, I think Bill Belichick would probably be number one on the list, man, ahead of any other coach I can think of. College, pro, high school, I don't really care what you're talking. If it's played on a football field, I think Bill Belichick's number one for my money. And so that anytime the Patriots play well, it's not a surprise to me. And then to be honest with you, man, if we're being objective, the Packers have not looked real good at any point this year.
This defense that I heard was supposed to be all world isn't living up to it so far.
No, they're a
lot of struggles. I mean,
yeah, I mean they're kind of middle of the pack, above average type of team, man. You know, they got a all world quarterback that helps a lot, but they have a lot of deficiencies, man. You know, I think the Packers are going to struggle through this whole year. And we've talked about them pretty extensively. Obviously, we're both Packer fans, but you know, they're going to have to. This is going to be a season long process for them, so. I'm not surprised that the Patriots gave him a run, you know. In the end, the Packers got the win. So at the end of the year, it's a W, right? That's all that matters when you're trying to get home field and seeding and make playoffs and stuff. So just take it and move on.
Speaking of W's, before we leave the football world, let's talk about our picks for this week's games. I know we kind of compared ahead of time. Let's talk about where we're different and why.
Well, it's not going to be a very long conversation there. So I ran through our picks. You submitted your picks for this week. I compared them to mine. And we have exactly one game that we feel different on. That is the Detroit Lions at the team you were just talking about, the New England Patriots. So based on the fact that you picked the Lions, who, by the way, I absolutely love Lions football. It's like they're playing in the Big 12. They don't care. They just want to play 52-51, and let's not even send the defense out on the field. Let's just score. So from a fan's perspective, it's kind of fun, man. I mean, they can score. It doesn't seem like anyone can stop them, and at the same time, they can't stop anyone either. So you know, if you got fantasy players in the Lions game, go ahead and put them in the roster, because that's just the kind of football that they're going to play, apparently.
Yeah, which I did. And actually, a little more inside story. Yes, I'm 7 out of 8 in our fantasy football team, but partly because of that, and you should be thanking me, buddy, partly because of that Detroit player on my team knocked your dad out of first place and let you get into first place in the
league. Yeah, I slid right into that top spot, baby. So, yeah, I appreciate it. As I was watching that, you know, we obviously, you know, track our fantasy on the phone. And, you know, as the day was developing, I was like, yeah, you go get him, Kelly. You know, you always root for everyone who's not playing you, right? And you always want to root for the underdog when he's not playing you. And the old man was in first place and only one undefeated, and you came in and from the bottom of the league, and you know, you're just like the NFL, man, any given Sunday. So yeah, those Lions helped propel you. Hockenson was a monster. I mean, that was ridiculous. So I want to say he got like 44 fantasy points from the tight end position. That's just madness. That happens like never. So
impressive. I went with Detroit. I guess I'm still on the – I think their coach has got it, building a mentality there. I think, you know, I guess pick them often enough, they're going to get some for me. Obviously, I'm not a huge Detroit fan, but I kind of like – I just like their coach, and I think they're trying to do something good there, and I guess if they can score like they have been, that's why I went with them.
I'll tell you what, while we're in football, the one team, I don't blame you for that, man. Like I said, the Detroit's fun, and more power to them. You know, they've always kind of been the little baby brother in the division. Never really posed a threat. You know, the Bears rise up, and the Vikings are good, And then there's the Lions. And so they've never really worried me being a Packer fan. They're just, you know, they're, you know, one of the few scenarios where you can kind of actually even, I wouldn't say root for, but you don't hate them, you know, even though you're in, they're in your division. They just never seem to pose a threat. Hey, the team I wanted to just circle back to real quick, we haven't talked about them in a while. And, you know, you and I think it was a little bit understated. I don't think anybody thought they were going to be this good. I'm talking about the Jacksonville Jaguars. And, you know, we thought they'd be competitive and scrappy. We kind of said the same thing about the Houston Texans. Like, hey, man, I don't think they're going to be a doormat. You know, I think they're going to be a competitive team. And, you know, they probably won't get all the wins all the time, but I don't think they're just going to lay down for anybody. And the Eagles have looked like certainly one of the best teams to this point in the season, balanced. You know, they play defense, they run the ball, they can throw the ball. In the NFC, they've looked like the class of the NFC thus far. And, I mean, really football-wide, you know, they're right there with the Chiefs and the Bills as far as best teams in the league, I think most people would say. And the Jaguars had them, man. They had them. And they were all over them early and, you know, five turnovers, you know, just kind of handed the game over, man. You can't turn the ball over five times in a football game and win very often, especially not against a good team. They lost by eight, but, you know, they were having their way with the Eagles early on. I mean, they were the better football team on the field. And then, you know, turnovers matter, though, man. I mean, you turn the ball over five times and lose by eight. You know, that kind of tells the story. But I'll say this going forward, that Jaguar team's not going anywhere. And potentially, with the struggles of the Colts, we'll see what kind of show the Colts put on tonight. I mean, I know Taylor's out. You know, they just haven't seemed to put it together yet. You know, Michael Pittman missed a game. You know, we'll see. The Colts, I thought they were the class of that division, but, you know, so far they haven't shown it. But the Jaguars have, man. They very well might be the best football team in that AFC South. So shout out to them, man, and what they're doing there. I'm real happy for the Jacksonville Jaguars, you know, given where, you know, kind of the redemption story like Geno Smith a little bit. You know, this is a team version where, you know, they got put through the ringer and they're coming out the other side. And they're, you know, they're not just a feel-good story. I mean, they're a good football team, man. I mean, they can play.
I can't find a thing to disagree with what you said there. Actually, for a while, I thought they were going to knock off Philly. You know, I think that's a case of, you know what? Sometimes you gotta learn how to win. And I think that, you know, they started having the things go wrong, and sometimes that becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. But I've said this before, and I think it's coming true, not that I'm any grand prognosticator, but I think that those players all just got to be so happy to be out of the chaos of last year. And they're a team to be reckoned with, and other teams in their division are all struggling more than I thought they would, not just Indy, Tennessee. You know, I'll be really interested all up to see, you know, in the old 16-game season, we'd be a quarter through the league. We're a little bit under that when you do the math in a 17-game, but be interesting to see when we check in in early November. We'll be about halfway through the season. Where any of these early stories land, you know, I'd like to say
that. All those teams too. You know, sorry to cut you off, but the Jags are the youngest, so you'd think they'd have the most growing to do. And you know, the fact that they look like the best now. Now I know there's some moving parts, you know, especially in Indy's case, Tennessee not so much, but you know. If anything, you would think the Jags would be the slower ones to make it to the dance floor, right? Like that, you know, they were the ones who got a new head coach and a huge like turnover across the board and blah blah blah. So if they have the potential for the most growth and they look like the best team now, yeah, man, I just don't know how you pick against
them. You know, sometimes it comes together right time, man, where you got so. The thing about football in particular, I think, is, you know, you want a team that's got is young enough that they're not all the age veterans where it's a struggle, but not too young where they're still learning, if you will. And when you can find that sweet spot of young, so they got the energy and the everything, and the skills are coming out at the NFL level, sometimes that can come together in a really sweet spot and magic happens. Now, I don't know if that's going to happen with the Jacksonville, but you know what? I'm going to root for him. I like Doug Peterson. He seems like a decent guy. He was Packer backup for a while. Long list of them to Brett Favre. And then, you know, he seemed like he was an okay coach in Philly. Different things went sideways. So we'll see.
Yeah. Anyway, I just want to throw it out
there. Yeah, no, it's a good shout out.
I hope I hope they maintain. I want them to be a good story all year. So we'll see what happens. I mean, just real happy for those guys, man. That kind of out of the darkness and they're out there having fun, man, and playing football and they're doing a great job at it.
Well, Chris, it's October.
And yeah, some baseball in here. I hope that's what you're referencing here.
You know, I mean, that always does mean baseball, and again, a cliche, but the stars shine brightest for baseball in October, and guys make their career in Hall of Fame sometimes this month. Kind of a new deal, a new playoff format here with these divisional byes and not the one game wild card stuff they had. We have, you know, more wild card and interesting three game series in one town for the first part of the playoffs that kick off tomorrow.
Yeah. Okay. Let me just lead off with this. So I don't know if anyone from MLB is listening, but please. I'll just be perfectly honest, okay? So I'm a sports fan. I follow sports throughout the year. NASCAR's in their playoffs, and anytime a World Cup or an Olympics comes along, I'm in it. But I am a seasonal fan, okay? And, I'll pick up a game here and there throughout the season on baseball. I am in no way a diehard season-long baseball a fan, right? So I pick up, like millions of other people do, about this time of year. And if there's some races for playoff spots, I'll pick up with like a week or two to go and follow the final seven or eight games of the stretch to see who makes the playoffs. And then once the playoff starts, I'm in, though, right? So, and I'm not alone in that. Now, baseball, you have a 162 game season. You start in, I mean, you start drawing attention in March, man. You start playing games in April. You take all year to play your season, and then for whatever reason, you get on the bullet train once the playoffs start, and you just want to get that thing over as quick as you can. I think baseball could take a lesson from NBA and hockey and like, hey, man, why don't you stretch this thing out a little bit? You know, this is when people, you're gaining a whole bunch of new fans right now. Millions of people across the country are just tuning in. And for whatever reason, baseball just wants to sprint through the playoffs and get it over as fast as possible. And the whole setup has never made sense to me. Now, I will say they've made improvements, okay? The one-game playoff was ridiculous. And not only was it – baseball shouldn't – why do you play 162 games if you can decide a winner in a game? Now, I know why football does it, because of the injury risk and the recovery time and the preparation time. You know, football is just a much more physically abusive sport, and you cannot put those guys through that three times a week, right? They need the time off, and I understand you can't play a season that lasts 2 years in football either, right? So you got to get it done in a year somehow. So I'm happy that they moved to best two out of three. It beats the hell out of the one game playoff. I'm happy that more teams have an opportunity. I think it increases excitement. I think this setup is an improvement. Okay, I think they've done better. I think they're on the right path. I still think they have work to do in my mind. So you know, baseball's just set up differently, man. So you know, if I'm the Cincinnati Bengals, my quarterback is Joe Burrow, and I don't care what game it is. Joe Burrow is starting. He's my starting quarterback. You know, as long as he's healthy, right? Tom Brady's the Bucs' starting quarterback. In baseball, that's not the case. The same guy doesn't start every day. And, you know, there's some teams, man, who are set up for, you know, they got two studs, man, and they can throw two world-class arms at you back-to-back. In a three-game series, those two guys pitch bang-bang, and the series might be over in two games. You know, you might get seven hits in two games because these guys are amazing. But when you go across the roster, Team B, who got beat 0-2, they might actually be the better team. You know, you just didn't get into their starter number three and starter number four, where their depth starts to play a role. You weren't able to see some of the whole team play because it was set up as a sprint. So I hope now I'm gonna follow it, man. I'm into it, and like I said, I think they've made strides in the right direction. But you can't have a 162 game season, set it up the way you do, where you have five starters, deep pens, you know, you're milking this thing for months, and then have your playoffs be an entirely different format. It's an entirely different game all of a sudden. And that part I think is unfortunate. But all that said, I just want to get that off my chest, man. So baseball, if you're listening, you know, shorten the regular season, lengthen the postseason, and I think you'll be better off for it. And I think you'll make more money. So
I hadn't really thought about it that much, but I think I like everything you're saying. I will say this. I mean, so okay, all these teams that are in the playoffs, right? We hype it up and all that. For example, Seattle Mariners. You know, first time. You know, I moved to Seattle in 2001. End of 2001 when they had their 116 game wins. Little did I know they'd never make the playoffs again until now. So, shout out to them. T-Mobile Park, I guess now I knew it as Safeco Field. It's really a great place, a great atmosphere for a ball game. I'd like to see them do something. Obviously, they're on the road. But, okay, they're all happy. But, you know, their whole playoff experience could be over before the weekend's out. And I think what you're saying is spot on. I would take a shorter regular season because, I mean, there is a reality. You cannot play later in the year. I mean, with so many teams in cold weather, it's already iffy sometimes. But I really do like how the NBA and the NHL do their playoffs lately. There for a while where they stretch it out a little bit. I'm okay with that because you get the intensity of the games, but also it's long enough that, you know, in baseball, it's not about, that's why I really didn't like the one game thing. It's the series, man. It's, can I, over a length, and not just one series, but over and over, and the whole playoffs emphasizes something different. So hopefully they can think about continued changes. The other thing, I think the dumbest rule they have, I feel like I'm back in playground days as a little kid. This nonsense of putting a guy on second base in the 10th inning, it changes the whole silliness of the game, and I don't like it at all. You want to have a pitch clock? Great. Don't need to see the guys standing around adjusting their batting gloves for 30 seconds. But you know what? Just don't put somebody on base.
Yeah, I actually agree with you. There's other places that I think you can have an effect on the length of a game that would be, you know, what you want to feel like is at the end of a sporting event, the best team won. The officials didn't decide the game. There was, it wasn't some freak variance. That you know, it's not the roll of a dice or the flip of a card that determined the outcome, right? Or the flip of a coin. You know, it was the players on the field. And I think there's other ways. I think the pitch clock. I think there's different ways you can affect a game and the length of it without affecting the game. You know, the outcome of it. So I agree with you, man. You know, dude, you guys are here all night anyway. Just ride it out, man. Otherwise, I mean, fine, put a guy on second starting in the seventh inning then if you want. You know what I mean? Like, what the hell's the difference at that point? If you're going to start monkeying with the game, you know, do it earlier then, dude. Do it every inning if you really want then. That'll speed things up, you know? So,
Look, I get it that we have at some point in every sporting event, I mean, if it's not ending in the regular period, whatever that is, you have to do something. But I know sometimes, hey, they, you know, hey, we're going to start on this yard line or this in different sports or whatever, or, you know, and they'll go to a shootout in hockey and soccer, and all the other things. But you're not giving, and I know both teams get it, but you're not making something happen artificially that didn't already happen.
Yeah.
In the other sports. And in baseball, you are. I really don't like it because, like, there's no guarantee the guy is always going to get on second. And why second? Why, you know, that totally changes the game in that, hey, you put a guy on first, it still leaves a double play to happen. But second base, I mean, just getting to second in baseball is not a common thing. I mean, it requires either that you have an extra good hit, a player makes an error, or you are extremely fast. And you're giving up too much, in my mind, as a result.
Hey, I'll tell you what. I agree with you entirely. Something occurred to me, man. I don't see any reason why we shouldn't be able to make some picks on the series as they progress through the playoffs. You want to make that a thing? I know we do our football picks every week.
Yeah, let's pull it up, man.
All right, man. I'll tell you what, and I'll even give you the current odds. So. Padres are playing at the New York Mets. Going to be all three games playing on the road. Padres are plus 150. Mets are minus 180. Who do you like there?
Yeah, those are both some really good. You know, I want to say this. It's really interesting with the playoffs. If you look at the records of these teams, I mean, the Braves and the Mets had incredible seasons. Not that the Padres didn't have a good one, but here again, and the Padres actually got a Brewer that actually, I think, caused a downfall of my Brewers' season by them trading away Josh Hader. But I got to go with the Mets in New York. They can roll out some good pitchers, and I think they take that series. I don't know what you think.
Yeah, I'm actually going to take a dog straight away, man, and go with the Padres you know, hard to quantify this one exactly. This isn't going to boil down to on-base percentages and ERAs or anything else. The Mets, to me, are just one of those teams that just find a way to, you know, trip over themselves regularly. And, you know, there's just some franchises out there, man, that they got the talent. You know, there's no real mathematical reason that they shouldn't be advancing through playoffs. And the Mets just strike me as the – now, the Padres are historically that team as well. So it's kind of the immovable object, unstoppable force here. So both of these teams find a way to blow it late in the season. But I think the Padres did make a run last year. I think they have a recent taste of the postseason. You know, and I haven't Tatis Hurts, obviously. I mean, one of the best players in baseball. But and the Mets do have pretty ridiculous arms. But I just feel like somehow, some way, like the Cincinnati Bengals or the Cleveland Browns or the Los Angeles Clippers, they're just going to find a way to blow it. And so I'll give you the favorite right from go. Unless you have the Mets, I'll take the Padres for no other reason than they're playing the Mets. So I'll tell you what, we'll jump straight into your team. You've already talked about a little bit. The Seattle Mariners, they're traveling out of the country to play their baseball. I'm going to have to go to Toronto, which isn't the worst city to play baseball in, I guess. But what do you think their chances are? I'll tell you the odds here, Kelly. Mariners are plus 130 and the Blue Jays are minus 150. So Vegas has this as a pretty close contest. Could go either way with the Blue Jays being a slight favorite.
I'm going to go with my heart a little bit. But and I think they're up, you know, they're up and coming, obviously, the Mariners. I think they can do this out in Toronto. It's really actually a nice place to see a ball game. I was fortunate to go to one in April. But they got a lot of young guys. I'm going to go with the Mariners.
Well, I'll get my odds back here because I'm just going to stick with the home team. You know, I'm not surprised. I mean, this series really could go either way. You know, it's nice that they're getting a chance to play it. You know, I love that more teams are being invited. You don't know who could catch some heat, man. You know what I mean? It's a fresh start. Different teams. I mean, you know, I kind of looked at the records coming in, and I kind of looked at the last 30 and kind of you know, just got a picture of what's been happening as of late. And I track the standings all throughout the year. And like I said, I'll catch a game from time to time. But most of these teams are kind of, you know, roughly in the same ballpark, man. There's no real smoking hot team coming in. You know, Braves have been pretty hot, I guess. But and the Mets have kind of maybe not so much. But other than that, all these teams have kind of been playing the same baseball for an extended period of time now. They're winning at roughly the same rate. You know, they are who they've been. And now is an opportunity for things to start over. Now is an opportunity for hitters to get hot. Now is an opportunity for a team who maybe wasn't thought of as a favorite to win the World Series. Man, you get hot at the right time, and you start moving the connection on a bat 3/4 of an inch, you know, from the end to the sweet spot, and you know, all of a sudden now. Things that used to be flyouts are home runs, and it can make a big difference, you know. So, and you never know who that's going to be. So I like that more teams are getting an opportunity to go to the dance and maybe see if they can make a miracle happen. This particular one could go either way. I'm just going to go with the home team just because they're home. And I know those Toronto fans give a lift to their sports teams, and we'll see. I think that might be enough to pick them over the top. So we both got a favorite and a dog so far. This one is a close one as well. Vegas has as the closest of all the series. The Philadelphia Phillies are going to go to St. Louis and play the Cardinal. So the St. Louis Cardinals are historic. They're one of the Phillies aren't bad either in this category. The Cardinals are one of those teams. They're the anti-Met. They're the team who, you know, scrappy and probably doesn't belong, but somehow they found themselves in the playoffs, and then somehow they won again, and somehow they won again, they're one of the franchises in sports that I found over the years that just seems to outperform when the lights get brightest and when the playoffs start. Somehow the Cardinals just find ways to advance, even when, you know, the talent says they probably shouldn't. What's your take?
So you do know that the Cardinals are the team that broke my childhood baseball heart, correct?
Oh, I did not know that, actually. Fill me in. Give me the story.
You know, back when they the one time the Brewers made the World Series, they were up 3-2 on the Cardinals. And they lost the last 2 games to St. Louis. I was, you know, 14, 15 years old, probably a sweet spot for enjoying sports. That was Harvey, you know, the Brewers with guys like Robin Young, Cecil Cooper, Paul Molitor. Anyway, so the Cardinals, they're my downfall, if you will. I don't know, it was the magic for Albert Pujols and Yadier Molina and Adam Wainwright going to continue, or does the magic end? I think these games are in St. Louis, correct?
Yes, they are.
I think St. Louis, if it was in Philly, I'd go for Philly, but I'm going to go for the Cardinals.
I'm not going to dive into it too much. I agree. I'm going with the Cardinals as well. Again, I mean, close series. You know, all these series are close. I mean, you know, they're close in the standings. They're close in the spread, Vegas odds. You know what I mean? It could go either way, but I'll take the home team. I do want to just – you touched on it for just a second. You mentioned his name. The Albert Pujols, man. I mean, I am so happy for that guy. And who would have ever thought, you know, at this point in his career, you know, the way he's looked the last, I mean, for a while now, man, the tank was empty, you know, and then he goes back to St. Louis and just starts ripping them. And was able to get, what did he finish at? 703, I think?
I believe it's 703.
Hey, kudos to him, man. That is awesome. I mean, one of the league's all-time greatest hitters. You can make an argument, you know, it's different eras and stuff. But I'll just say he's one of the greatest hitters the game has ever seen. And I don't think anyone can argue that, right? So, for him to all of a sudden find 27-year-old power in that old body, man, it gives me hope.
maybe you got to go find a trial. No, I mean... Right, so I mean, again, whatever it is, that finding that last little bit of reserve, because recall last year, I mean, the Angels let him go, the Dodgers picked him up for a little while, but I mean, that tank's been empty with Albert for a long time, and more power to him to have that resurgence here in St. Louis for the last year. I think that he's always been, you know, in some ways, I don't know how to describe it entirely, but in the era that I grew up with in baseball, the home run was a very dramatic thing. I know it's changed a little bit now with some, it's kind of either strikeout or home run. The singles, doubles, and triples are a lot less. But Pujols still, you know, kind of reminds me of, hey, man, it can happen on any pitch, and when it does, it's pretty dramatic in the game. So more power to him to have done it 703 times and to have done it, you know, with a bit of flair and pizzazz here at the end of his career.
Yeah, just a cool story, man. I mean, just, you know, just really cool. Like I said, man, gives all us old guys hope, man. Toby Keith says, I ain't as good as I once was, but I'm as good once as I've ever been. And I think Albert Pujols' year in St. Louis got kind of that to a T.
You know, if I wasn't a copyright infringement, I'd cue up a little John Fogerty, put me in coach.
All right, last one on the wild card slate is going to be the Tampa Bay Rays. Going to be playing in... Cleveland against the Guardians now. Let's see. I think this one's about a 180. Yep. Oh, no. Hold on. Stand by. Guardians minus 120. Excuse me. The Guardians minus 120. Razor even money. So, actually, I misspoke earlier. This actually, technically speaking, is tied with the Cardinals and Phillies as far as the spread's concerned. So, Vegas thinks it's going to be pretty tight. Could go either way, just the ever-so-slight edge to the Guardians being that they're at home.
I got to be honest. I don't have a strong opinion on this one. I have not followed either of these teams all that closely.
Flip the coin.
I'm going to go with only because they're the home team, I'll go with Cleveland.
All right, well, just for the sake of mixing it up, I'm going to go with the Rays just because I like to be different. For no particular reason, this is a close one. Could go either way. So in an effort to, you know, yeah, so we picked three different. The only one we picked the same is the Cardinals. So if you want to make some money, folks, go put your money on the Phillies right now because Kelly and I both agree the Cardinals are going to win that series, so pretty much got zero chance that that's going to happen. And then other than that, we split them, buddy. So Cardinals are the only one we got the same. So
hey, and before we wrap it up, I just want to – I know they don't play till the next round, but also another great story. Shout out to Aaron Judge, man.
Yeah.
Again – handled himself like a class act all throughout it. And what a story that he gives. You know, one of the balls gets to his mom. I mean, fine. You know what? I like that part of sports when it's all good. And, yeah, it's good sometimes when it does have a happy ending.
Yeah, I mean, there's plenty of things we can focus on if we chose to. Just like life, man, you can find all the negatives and highlight them if you want. But if you choose to, man, sports affords you a lot of opportunities to see the good. And it's important to remember, man, these guys, I know it doesn't feel like it when you're watching them on TV, but these are all human beings, you know. They were all babies one time. They all had to grow up, and I know they become larger than life and millionaires and stars and everything else. But at the end of the day, man, they're humans. They got moms and dads and children, and it's just nice, man. I'm happy when people do well in the world, and we'll see what the numbers look like next year. But I'd say Aaron Judge is going to end up doing pretty well in the world.
Yeah. No, I mean, look, I know, look, the world's a tough place and there's a lot going on, and I'm not saying sports are perfect and there's a lot of things that need to be cleaned up and even there. But I think the thing that you said that resonates with me, Chris, is, right, these people were all babies and kids and started out like you or me, in a lot of cases probably with even less. I mean, and they're still people, and they have parents and brothers and sisters, and I don't care how much money you have, there's still the emotion of your family connections. And yeah, I won't even pretend to know what it's like to be a, you know, multimillionaire or hundreds of million dollars, but I do believe from, you know, they're still people, and they have emotion, and I like it when, like I said, I'm going to focus on that. This is why I enjoy sports. I like the drama and the, hey, did we win or lose, and that kind of that tightness you get in your gut a little bit as the game's coming down to the wire. And what's going to happen? And, oh, the drama. And I like that. I mean, it's. I guess it's a safe way to kind of have a feeling that would be hard to achieve otherwise, in a safe way. And I also, I like the feel-good, happy-ending stories. I mean, there is enough things that we all work on in our own lives and other arenas that we're advocating for. For me, sports is a nice escape, a few hours a day, sometimes, you know, just to have a little fun, man.
Yeah, I agree with you wholeheartedly, Kelly, man. That's what I use sports for. I enjoy it. I love talking about it. It's a area of conversation that doesn't get me nearly as... Now, there's times to talk about politics, and there's times to talk about things that need to be talked about, and I got a full-time job, man, and I got to do things that, you know, are related to my job, and I like my job quite a bit, but man, it ain't all roses all the time, right? And you know, for me, sports is an escape. It's an opportunity to focus on something that really doesn't bring a ton of negatives in my life, man. It's just, you know, I don't like losing, right? So I play fantasy football, and I'll throw a bet down from time to time. So, you know, I don't like that part, but I gamble responsibly, and I enjoy the contest, man, and the stories that come out of it, you know, when you follow sports closely, you know, similar like we were talking about Geno Smith, man. I just like that stuff. I love seeing the underdog or the comeback story, or, you know, the guy who was counted out for whatever reason and making good. And, you know, if you get a chance to watch the Kurt Warner story, the American Underdog, man, I mean, it's just a great story of a dude who was a breath away from not realizing his dream, and it just came together in a magical way, and you know, went on to a Hall of Fame career, and you know, that's why I watch too, man. I just I love what sports brings.
Yeah, well, hey, Chris, and to our listeners, it's always good to catch up. A lot going on, and we'll see where we all end up after the weekend, and in both the NFL and baseball, basketball and hockey getting ready to kick off, and we'll have more to talk about on those, and life in general. And really enjoyed the chat again, Chris.
Yeah, you too, Kelly, man. Appreciate it, bud. don't get too comfortable on your lead in our pick'em. I plan on making a move starting any minute here. So yeah, we'll catch up hopefully next week, buddy, and we'll see where we're at in the MLB playoffs and have some new series to pick. And we'll see where we're at, you know, college. We didn't even touch on college football, but that's starting to ramp up, and there'll be plenty to talk about. You know, it almost feels like the preseason. Well, it is a little bit, you know, but they're going to be starting getting into some games that matter pretty soon. And I'd be interested to get your take on what's happening in the college football landscape as well.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know when. It should be any week here where they start to come out with I know we're going to 12 teams in the playoff pretty soon, but they should be coming out with the whatever they call it, the thing that determines the four teams.
Yeah.
Not just the polls, but
talk about slow to change. Holy cow. So I was registering my complaints on baseball. You want to talk about someone who's like stuck in the quicksand is college football. Like, come on already, man.
we're going to have a lot to talk about probably on the next episode there. I got a lot of thoughts on college football and the slowness to change and bowl games and playoffs. And they've been in the dark ages for so long, and it's like you people are there's ample rewards out there, and you can do much better for both your players and your fan base, and they're slowly starting to recognize that. And like I said, we'll talk about that more next episode. Thanks, everyone, for listening. And again, we'll talk to you next week. This has been the podcast to be named later.
Hey, thanks, Kelly. You have a good night, bud.